When the characters of Rosencrantz and Guildenstern take center stage, they do so in an attempt to make sense of the world around them and to try to face what is inevitable for everyone. Paul Denhart is the director of Rosencrantz and Guildenstern Are Dead, and he says he loves this play because it's based on his all-time favorite play, Hamlet, and it features Rosencrantz and Guildenstern, who he thinks tend to get overlooked and not valued for the pivotal role they play in the drama.
Which is friends of Hamlet who betray him and sell out to curry favor with the new king. And so it's, I think, a devastating loss for Hamlet. And in this version of the play, they're here, but they really don't know what's going on. And they're kind of people pass through and in and out, and they're confused. They're trying to figure it all out and eventually wind up dead.
Yeah, because, spoiler alert, it's in the title. So don't get upset with us, please. It's an existential comedy.
It is. It's. I mean, Stoppard. I brought a little quote from Stoppard. If I can read it, he says it's about two people who are knocking about inside the finite parameters of an invented story invented by William Shakespeare. They have roles to play. They don't really know what's going on in the story in which they become involved. They're not told what they're there for, what's really happening. And to my reading, they go to their deaths without ever having understood what the whole thing was about and why they are now dead. So if you like, it's about that, and even as I'm explicating it to you, I can see that's quite a kind of promising myth for ourselves and our lives. That, you know, we're here, we don't know everything that's going on, a lot of what we're told is lies, and we try to make sense of things, we try to preserve ourselves, and we die. How cheery.
So we get this worm's eye view of Hamlet from Rosencrantz and Guildenstern, and I remember reading it, and the very beginning, they kind of seem like empty vessels at the beginning.
Yeah, they're in a place, Stoppard describes it as a place with no visible character. They have really no visible character. We don't hear their names for quite a while into the play. And they're tossing coins, so they have this incredible string of, like, you know, 85 to 90 tosses of heads in a row. So right away, reality's turned a little upside down. I mean, that's not natural. And so they find themselves displaced in time and in reality. And I kind of think of it like what we're really seeing is, you know how your life flashes before your eyes when you're dead? It's like they pulled the lever and the trapdoor went and they went down and they hit. And before they die, they remember all this.
There is a lot of theatricality in this play. They break the fourth wall, you know, they're not too worried about everybody in the audience knowing this is a play. There's a lot of theatricality, especially when the players start coming in.
The players are just a collection of characters, and we're playing a lot with gender identity in this, and we have women playing players who are cross-dressing as men, one woman's kind of in between, men who are cross-dressing as women. I mean, Stoppard calls them transvestite prostitutes. We're setting this in the 20s, 30s in Europe, and there was this kind of cross-dressing movement going on back at the time, kind of think cabaret decadence.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And he's blurring the lines between the actors who then interact with the audience, sometimes move into the audience. And so in the close confines of Westhoff Theater, we have removed some of the seats so that actors can move behind the audience, through the audience, and even sit in the midst of the audience.
So you're really taking advantage of Westhoff space. It's not a traditional proscenium theater. Are you using the thrust application then?
It is the thrust application, and you know, kind of a la Brecht. We're not trying to hide the lighting instruments. We're not, everything is exposed. The whole back wall of the theater is exposed for the first two acts. And indeed, Rosencrantz and Guildenstern, Stoppard has places in the play where they obviously are direct addressing or at least referring to the audience, and we've said, well, let's just run with that. I don't want to give anything away, but expect the audience should expect to have the actors close in proximity and maybe talking directly to them.
Well, this play is very witty. There's a lot of, like, back and forth dialogue. And I get the impression this has to be really crisp. It has to move.
Yeah, I told them it's like West Wing on speed.
Hmm. Oh,
you know?
Man.
You know how in West Wing they would be walking and talking and everything's very fast and you're just keeping up. And that's what I'm playing with here. And I also, okay, I'm going to say this. I hate park and bark theater. I hate when actors just stand stock still and just talk. And, you know, I believe in the primacy of words, but I like to see the actors moving. And so we're constantly in motion, and we're speaking at a very brisk pace, and I think the audience will appreciate that. I think we're going to have a quick and entertaining and engaging evening in the theater.
Even though they may be moving, they're not really going anywhere.
Well, that's part of the joke, right? We have them going in circles and around the audience, and they never quite make the exit until the end of the play. And
it's the ultimate exit off this mortal coil.
That's it, you know? I mean, there's, for all the compasses in the world, there's only one direction, and time is its only measure. And they run out of time.
Now, does the play suggest that we can overcome the randomness of the world, or are we powerless?
Well, you know, do we have free will? There's a moment where they say, could we made another choice? Is there a moment when we could have turned this way instead of that way? And there, I don't know that it answers that question. I think it leaves it for us to ponder as we exit the theater, which is, as Stoppard says in the play, every exit is just an entrance someplace else. So I'm hoping that people will exit the theater going, what in the heck was that all about? What, you know, and ask these questions. Do we have free will? Do we truly have choice? Are we at the whims of the wind and fortune? Or is there anything we can do to change that?
Do you feel the ideas such as those of this play will be especially appealing now in this moment in our history?
Well, you know, this is indeed an interesting moment in our history where some of us do feel, I believe, that we've been left adrift and that a direction we thought we were moving in is suddenly amongst the shoals. And our course is not certain. So I think, yeah, I think it's very timely in terms of, also, I mean, just the idea of Rosencrantz and Guildenstern selling out their friend for political favor. There's political intrigue throughout Hamlet and in fact, a kind of usurpation of the throne. Did I say that? I think I did.
You did, yes, very well.
And so I think there's parallels to what's going on in our country today.
Well, Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are not driving the action of the play. Is this a comment from Stoppard on passivity?
Well, it's interesting because they are passive, but then they start to drive it in terms of trying to figure out, not always effectively, what is happening to them. Why are they here? What are we ever going to know what the meaning of this all was? Did we die for nothing? I don't know that Stoppard says, yes, we definitely have free will. I think it's a question.
Is this a tragedy? And if it is a tragedy, is it a special kind of tragedy with all the humor?
Well, you know, I don't know. Stoppard thought it was a comedy. And even in his notes in the beginning of the script, he says, you know, when I wrote this, I thought it was really pretty funny, a funny situation. And I think it should be played humorously. And of all the productions in the world that have been done, there have been two that took it very seriously indeed and weren't very good. So, you know, how do we deal with this idea that we're here on this rock and it moves and we're moving, but we really have no control and we're going to die, and we deal with it with humor?
We see a lot in pop culture of a fascination with minor characters in movies and TV shows. I especially see this a lot in geek culture, where people obsess over, like, Admiral Akbar from Return of the Jedi and things like that. Do you suppose this play kind of spurred the current obsession with focusing on minor characters?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I think Stoppard, that was part of the fun, was taking these two kind of unknown, very, very functionary characters in many ways in Hamlet and having them become the focus of kind of what's happening off. It's kind of like noises off, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, okay, this is what's happening off stage when all this Hamlet stuff is going on. And it's these two people who are kind of lost in this Escher-like castle, you know, never knowing which way to turn and where they're going to wind up.
That's Paul Denhard, director of Rosencrantz and Guildenstern Are Dead, opening tomorrow night and running through the 25th at Illinois State University's Westop Theater. Although Denhard is the fight director for the Illinois Shakespeare Festival, he's leaving those responsibilities to another for this show. Graduate student John Tovar is the fight director for Rosencrantz and Guildenstern. Tovar was once a student of stage combat at Illinois State University. His instructor was Paul Denhard. I'm Laura Kennedy.